Righto, let's do it. We'll start with the intro this time for once, will we? Scott Brown here.
Nathan Sinead here.
Nathan, 20 seconds. What do you know about me? Go. Only good stuff, please.
Only good stuff? Well, the first thing is you can't tackle in rugby. Second one, you're a brilliant communicator. He's a smashing lad. He's a terrible driver. He is fabulous with kids. And he is a comes from a great sporting pedigree.
Does he?
Yeah, you
my
do.
My man, I love that.
He would love that. What about
anyway,
your old
20
dad?
20 seconds is up, mate. Sorry.
Go for it. What are 20 seconds about me?
Okay, you're from New Zealand. Okay, you bought me my first lunch in Luxembourg, so that goes a long way. You have your own coffee mug at Top Squash, which I think says a lot about you. Mad into your sports, just like me. Got an opinion, rightly or wrongly. Stick to your guns. I don't want to say anything bad.
You know me well enough, Scott.
Right, let's crack on, Bill. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with a guy, Adam Peterson. He was listening from Angola, called me off his oil rig and said, gave me a call and said, I was listening to your podcast last week. He said, yeah, the sound was rubbish. He said, every time I came on,
he did.
And he said, every time I came on, he had to turn the volume down. So, but yeah, Angola, we have your brother out there in Africa, isn't he?
Yeah.
Where's he?
Well, Middle East, it's sort of. It's not Europe.
Where's your brother?
Which one? Craig's out in Craig's out in Tunisia.
Tunisia.
Oh, that is Africa.
That is Africa.
Yeah. I stand corrected.
Okay, Angola a bit further south.
Yeah, obviously we've had a few bedding in issues, should we say, regarding the sound. So we're hoping that this is now been resolved. My God.
You were steaming,
Wednesday,
Scott.
Wednesday.
You were steaming.
Oh, my goodness. I was actually going to launch the laptop out of the window, which doesn't sound as impressive as it is because your office is on the ground floor anyway. But, I've watched so many YouTube videos, and you watch them, and you're like, right, well, that didn't tell me anything.
No, you're a hot little man, that's for sure. But we called you down. I went out the back, and we got a burrito.
Oh, stop it.
From the taco shop.
Unbelievable, Jeff. Unbelievable.
They've come in at a cracking time, haven't they?
Yeah, he's got a good Vicente. He's got a good thing going. Vicente's the chef, obviously, down at Top Squash. Cooks a mean feed down there if you fancy a lunchtime feed. Funniest time was actually when we do the holiday camps up at Top Squash.
Yeah.
And he'll rustle up something, and obviously we'll. Mate, yeah, the staff have got to eat as well.
If I can interrupt you there,
yeah.
Those kids during our camps that we do together, they eat like kings.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's no we're not talking Marmite sandwiches here.
No.
I mean, they look. It's interesting because we've been doing these camps for a little while. I've been involved with the Top Squash camps for a long time, and the ones that the kids go for, do you know what it is? Their favourite meal. It's a chicken curry.
Oh, mate, deadly.
They rip into it.
Nothing like a mild curry, you know? Big fan of a mild curry.
But if we told the parents on Wednesday they're going to be eating a chicken curry, I'm guaranteed the first thing we get back is my children don't really like chicken curry.
Yeah.
But I'm yet to find one that
has not cleaned
their plate.
Yeah, exactly, mate. As we said, so Vicente started up his burrito... Well, not burrito business. They call it the taco shop. Now they've got a truck, literally got a truck out the back, and he'll cook you up a meat feed.
I don't think you can get any more authentic than
Vicente
and Laura doing there.
We're going to run a little bit of a competition. So when we post this video, you need to tag a friend and like tacoshop.lu, and we will pick a winner. You can vote as many times as you want, and we'll see where we end up. Funny one, actually. So you remember Reese who popped in and disrupted us?
Interrupted.
Rudely,
yeah.
Last week.
We put a pause. That was the first time. There was another technology.
Yeah. But every now and again, Vicente will come out with this, what he likes to call hot sauce. Okay. And it is hot. Okay. But he says, he was explaining it to me in his broken English, that actually the trick to hot sauce is to... Yes, it's hot, but you want to have more of it, which is exactly what he does with this sauce. But anyway, Rhys Williams, being part Welsh, or fully Welsh, depending if the rugby's on, he went into the kitchen one day and was like, can I get some Tabasco sauce? And all you hear is Vicente go, what? Get out of my kitchen, get out of my kitchen. So yeah, give us, when we post this, tag you, obviously you'll tag a friend and like Taco Shop LU, and we'll sort you and a friend out with a free burrito. They say nothing in life is free. Well, this is free.
This is
good
free
stuff. It's good scrap. It's good scrap.
If we can come back over to Reece, because Wales are doing well in the Six Nations. They've got the triple crown. France haven't played their game, but there's a good chance that it's between those two to win the Six Nations. Who's he going to go for?
Oh, he'll go Welsh, I would imagine. Huh?
Do you think?
I have to ask him. I'm sure he'll turn up here again, won't he? No? Don't know, probably ringing at the doorbell. So yeah, actually, one thing I wanted us to get onto is, you know, being in Luxembourg, there's like an array of nationalities out here. So you look at yourself, obviously I'm born here, but you know, grew up in England, and then went to university in Ireland, and yourself, you're obviously from New Zealand.
Unique little country.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. Did you play squash for Luxembourg?
Yes.
Right, so do you think that, and again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, do you think that should be allowed? Do you think you should be allowed to adopt another country, if you know what I mean, instead of just being like, well, Nathan, I'm sorry, but you were born in New Zealand.
You played for New Zealand. Well, I did play for New Zealand, but it was in a more of a, not a social tournament. It was an official tournament,
yeah.
But it was more of a test series, as opposed to a world championship.
Yeah.
And I played for Luxembourg in the European Championships. The stand down period is 3 years.
Yeah,
that means that I would not be able to play in New Zealand, and I think many other sports do that. I'm not sure what rugby does that. You have to live
funny.
In another country.
It's funny, and the real reason why I've brought this up is because obviously the guy Charles Pietau, who was, I believe, the highest paid player in the world.
I can understand that he lights up the premiership, doesn't he?
I'm not sure if it's him now. It might be a Fijian lad, Semi Radrada now. They're both at Bristol. Let's just say Bristol have got a lot of cash. But anyway, he obviously played for the ABs up until 2015. I think he played 17 times. And then he moved to the UK. No, I think did he go to Ulster first? Or he might have been to Wasps for a year. Then Ulster for 2 years, and now he's obviously playing down at Bristol. We've got Pat Lam, who's top dog down there.
Yeah.
So he played Tonga under 20s. I believe he is Tongan by all accounts, isn't he?
Did he play for Tonga before he played?
Only at under 20 level. Now what they say is if you play at sevens level, then you declare for that country.
Right.
So you could play up to under 20s. You could declare for that country. But now this happened a couple of years ago. There was a fella, an English guy, called Stefan Armitage, and he won like 4 or 5 caps. And then he went to Toulon, and he was one of the best players in the world, hands down, number seven. But he wasn't, because he wasn't playing in England, he wasn't eligible to play for England. So there was all these rumblings about, oh, could he play for France? Now, there is a loophole in rugby union. If you take your 3-year break and then play in an Olympic qualifying event, so obviously they have Olympic sevens to qualify for the Olympics, you then become eligible for that country. So I believe that's what is going to happen. Pietau will play sevens for Tonga, which would then make him eligible for their full national team.
First of all, I think it's rugby is a small sport. Globally, small sport, and they're doing everything they can. I know they're making a lot of noise in New Zealand about growing the game, particularly in the islands. And I think it'd be wonderful to see some of these top
superstars,
a lot of these superstars are from the islands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would be great that if they're no longer eligible for their, let's say their country they've just represented, and Pietau's case for he's not eligible for New Zealand.
But what if I'm the young lad and all I want to do is play for Tonga, and I like maybe, you know, and that because he comes back that prevents me from having the opportunity to play for Tonga.
Well, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? But I think, yeah, I still think you want to see that Piatau's going to put Tonga on the map more so than the young lad. But I'd actually like to see those athletes contribute into Tongan rugby apart from
just playing. Yeah.
Whether it be a resident there, or whether it be playing their domestic game, whether it's a certain number of games, what are they doing also for the community?
Yeah.
As well in these instances.
But I've got a lot of these Polynesian fellas who are, you know, Tongan or Samoan or Fijian, and they even a lot of the Kiwis, like the Maoris and stuff, they come.
You'd have Jerome Kaino, you'd have many island.
But even you look at the England team, you know, you got the Vunipola brothers. You know, most teams, they do have that. You know, they've got those guys who come over, apply their trade here for 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it may be, and you know, and so be it. But I know there was a lot about these project players. So guys, they bring over, and I believe there was a guy called Jared Payne, who used to play
for Northland,
Canterbury as well. I think, didn't he?
Did he? I think he was a Blues player. Jared Payne, was he not? I can't remember.
He could have been. Serious player, and then all of a sudden up sticks, moves to Ulster, does his 3 years. Man, he went on the Lions tour.
That's right.
And it's like, and he played in Ireland. Now he was a good player.
You got Sean Maitland, who was a Crusader plays for Scotland.
So you know, it's almost like it becomes a. Is there a business element to it where it's like, right, I've played in New Zealand. I'm sorry, I'm using New Zealand as an example. Mm. No, I'm not sorry. I'm going to play. Yeah, I made it into Super Rugby. Mate, if you haven't got into the ABs by the time you're 23, 24, are you going to be a legend? You know, are you going to be good enough to do it?
Like Brad Shields.
Yeah, why wouldn't you up sticks? But hasn't he gone back to the Canes now, did I see?
I don't know.
I think there was rumblings of him going back to Canes, but he obviously came.
He certainly didn't play in the weekend, because I watched the highlights.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're, you know, is there a decision-making process where they're like, right, let's be honest, you're not going to cap by the All Blacks now, so why don't you? You've got a Scottish grandparent, or you've got an Irish grandma or something, why don't you? Well, I would explore options for you to get a contract out there. And because if you play, you go over there, you do 3 years, you play international rugby, that's more money, isn't it?
That's right. But
I'm not saying it's as black and white as that.
Bigger money playing for the clubs, though, isn't it?
Yeah, up in Europe it would be, yeah, I thought so.
A lot more. Or in Japan, for that instance.
But, you know, the interesting one would be, imagine if you couldn't switch and you just had to stay. Do you think if Piatau had known that, would he have stayed in New Zealand?
I don't think so, because he could get more bread and butter in the north. I think it's different for different sports. Sports, for example, that are well established with big numbers, basketball, for example. I mean, look at the number of players that play in the NBA, a professional competition, but they're still available for their homeland.
Yeah.
Lithuania, Germany, France. So.
Well, it's becoming more open now, isn't it? It used to be. Used to be all American, whereas now it's very much the world league, if you like.
That's guys, right.
If you're good enough to come from,
and those other teams they compete.
Oh yeah, well they're going to catch up, aren't they? Yep. Just follow the American model, and you know.
I think for different sports, then you have different rules on eligibility. There was a squash player, one of the greats of all time, Peter Nicol. That Scottish, played for Scotland, and it was funding that England squash were able to, or the English community, or a charitable, or sports trust, and they were able to contribute
more
than what the Scottish were able to do. So which is massive in a sport with very little money. So he
either play your sport for the country you were born in, but have to stop because they don't have the funding for it, or go to a different country.
That's exceptional to switch from Scotland to English. Not many athletes that would be prepared, or people that would be prepared to do that. And there was John White, who played for Australia, a squash player, phenomenal, one of the hardest hitters in the game, and he went and finished his career playing for Scotland. Again, it was due to funding.
Yeah, it's funny you say. Again, we'll keep rolling with this, like changing countries. There was someone called Victor Ann, right, who won 3 gold medals and a bronze medal competing for Russia at the Sochi Games in 2014 in speed skating. Come back to Sochi Games because that's a very interesting point as well. But he was actually from South Korea. Now, right. He was previously known, now I probably am going to pronounce his name wrong, as An Hun. And he actually won 3 golds and a bronze again in 2006 when he was competing for Korea. So he basically had this almost, well, it was an 8-year gap, if you like, in his international career, where he took the stand down period of 3 years, moved to Russia, and that was because of the funding. There was no funding for him to continue speed skating as he wanted to in South Korea. Right. So he moved to Russia, and I'd say, well, you'd be all over it if, you know, I'm sure if Usain Bolt rocked up here tomorrow, the Lux government would have no problem at all issuing him a Lux passport. No,
that's exactly right. The Maltese are very well known for that as well.
Yeah.
Did he have to change his name? Did he become Victor Unsky or...?
Yeah, Joe Schlowski, a couple of Teddy Bruskies, yeah. I was looking at the state of origin as well, which is the rugby league,
yep.
Just on in terms of the eligibility. So you're not allowed to have played test football for either New Zealand or England.
Because it's a tier one.
Exactly.
It's a tier one.
Okay, so that's fairly obvious, okay? So that's why you had like Burgess, James Graham, they were down there as England players, arguably good enough to play state of origin, but weren't actually eligible.
Brad Thorne.
Kiwi, but never played for New Zealand at rugby league.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right, I remember that. Yeah, he just played for Australia. And a lot of guys will do that in rugby league just because origin is almost bigger than international.
Most definitely. Yeah. I think the level of rugby league is phenomenal. It's one not to miss each year on the calendar,
good.
Isn't it?
It's always on a top squash. It's always on a top squash.
Right? It is, actually.
James Ken. the eligibility, that actually becomes permanent when you then play under 18 level. So they obviously play origin in the junior grade, so like under 20 and under 18. So if I was to declare for Queensland or New South Wales, that is my state, and you can't change from that. We talked about Gaelic football as well a couple of weeks ago, about how the eligibility is, you know, obviously if you play for your club in that county, that's the county that you then play for. Now, to be honest, when I was researching it, I got a bit confused about whether you could transfer from different counties and stuff. So if anybody could back me up on that, that'd be great. I guess it is allowed,
yeah,
but you know, it's frowned upon if you're jumping around counties, I would say. Funny enough about GAA, they do one every year called International Rules. Okay,
it's cracker. Mate, I've seen it.
It's basically just a big ding dong. apparently it got to the stage where, because the Aussies are all pros, like GAA is amateur, so these boys all have the job on the side. So they apparently used just to pick the 15 hardest blokes.
Yeah,
just get them
right
out on the pitch.
But that's hard. Even though they're professionals, it doesn't make them fragile. These guys are hard men. I used to live not far from the G, and went to many games in the year that I was living there.
Pitches are enormous.
The pitch?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a cricket oval. It's a cricket oval.
Yeah.
but these guys are hard boys. Melbourne D's were the team I supported. They're rubbish, but they're a little bit better these days. They have a drafting system similar to the NFL.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Well, very good.
So the team that finishes down the bottom normally will pick the better player.
Pick
so it's evens things up a little bit.
Do you see any more fallout from the whole Sonia McLaughlin thing with the trolls and stuff?
We're going to have to put on pause there. I think that's Reese.
Is that Reese again? Wait there.
I'm so sorry.
It's all good. It's the delivery man bringing the pizza. That's embarrassing. We're getting the
Did
sound...
You order a burrito? Did you order a burrito?
No, yeah, mate. So we're getting the sound sorted, okay? Mm-hmm. I've made a conscious effort to not eat whilst I'm talking as well. And now the bloody bell goes off, for God's sake. Just can't do it. Anyway, yeah, no, did you hear any more fallout about the whole Sonia McLaughlin thing, you know, about the trolls and stuff like that?
I thought our conversation last week closed it off.
Yeah, no, but I was just interested to see if there was any more after what had been you know, been put into the press and stuff. And I actually found one. Some fella, right? So apparently after the Wales game, have you heard of Ellis Genge?
No.
Right, so he's one of the props, okay? Very straight shooter, you know, has come from a sort of a rougher part of Bristol, plays for Leicester Tigers. Good player, good prop. And he's well liked because, mate, this guy's a normal bloke. He's the guy that got flack for doing an interview last year in the Six Nations, but was sipping at a beer whilst he was doing the interview.
And not allowed to do that?
Well, it's not in the rule book, is it? But it's, I suppose, oh, he's setting an example, and you know all those noises out there will pick at anything, you know. But he obviously, you know, in rugby you clap through the opposition in the tunnel. And he was just like, obviously they were pretty gutted, so he wasn't really clapping, he was just sort of zoned out in the tunnel. And this obviously gets put on Twitter, you know, people start piling into him. Mate, people are sending him death threats, right?
No, mate,
anybody who knows the English rugby team, there are certain individuals in that team you would not like to meet in a dark alley.
And he's one of them.
He'd be up at near the top of that list, you know. I'm sure he's a lovely legend, I'm sure he's a lovely bloke and stuff, but, you know, appearances can be deceiving, but... yeah, just like who in your right mind thinks you're, you know, that's going to end well for you, and that's going to lead me on to this little story I'm going to tell you here. This is brilliant, mate. So there was a boxer who used to play in the Premier League. Okay, he used to play football. Curtis Woodhouse is his name. Okay, and I was reading this article, and actually there was this quote that was put in the article. I'll see if you can remember what film this is from. I don't know who you are, but I have a very specific set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. You don't get
through, no.
Have you seen Taken?
No.
It's where his daughter gets kidnapped and he, like, they gets the phone.
Right.
And he's like, I don't know who you are. Watch Taken. And this is absolutely brilliant. It's Liam Neeson as well doing it. And he basically says, I will find you and I will kill you. He basically goes after the people who've kidnapped his daughter and hunts them down. He's like ex-CIA sort of thing, you know? So all the skills.
I'm going to follow up on that.
But anyway, this Curtis Woodhouse is a welterweight fighter and he's got a championship fight, and it's a good fight, but he loses. So some fella, as they do, piles into him saying, ah, you're a disgrace and all this sort
That's
of stuff.
That's a pretty bold move to do that. I mean, to troll... a boxer.
Yeah, mate, let me get into this. This is brilliant, okay? So, all your man does is responds with, lol, okay? Well, obviously, that puts petrol on the fire, doesn't it? So the guy keeps going back at him and says, you couldn't defend your Mickey Mouse title, you're a waster, all that time you've wasted on this career and you've come up short. And it keeps going. And then Woodhouse puts out a tweet and says, he will pay £1,000 to anybody who sends a picture of the guy who is trolling him and his address.
And his address.
Right? Anyway, so there's a bit of tit for tat and it keeps going because your boy, who is, we'll hang him out to dry here under the bus because I don't know him and I don't care, mate. There's a guy called Jimmy O'Brien. Okay? And next thing you know, your man posts a picture of him and then a sign saying Mount View Road, which is where he lives. Okay? And he also puts that he's stopping by to see an old friend, put the kettle on. That's like the one, you know, Hannibal Lecter,
yeah.
At the end of Silence.
Yeah, I do.
I've got to go. I'm having an old friend for dinner. Yeah, that's all
I
mine,
can't.
Yeah. Wait, I'm not done. Let me keep going, okay? Anyway, as the boxer's heading down the motorway, he's sending pictures, you know, as you go under the signs and
yes.
Stuff, tweeting them. Yeah, en route, be about 50 minutes, mate. And then it suddenly dawns on your man that it's like, oh God, I think he's actually coming down here. So he starts backpedaling, saying, oh, you know, I was just looking for a bit of interaction on social media. It's all tongue in cheek, blah, 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 blah. And then the boxer then says, it's a bit late for that. I'll be there soon, mate. And anyway, so the scene is set for a dramatic showdown, you know, like at the end of Avengers Endgame. However, the troll didn't come to the party as the boxer eagerly awaited his arrival. And that was it.
Or was it?
No, some months later, the pair were reunited on ITV's Daybreak, and to be fair, Mr. James O'Brien apologised to Curtis for his actions. But still, it doesn't make it okay.
He got called out.
That's so good, isn't it? That's so good, mate. Imagine the amount
of love these trolls to get called out. Yeah.
But there was actually, there's been a big, it'll be interesting to see what happens now, because this is, you know, there's been a lot of high profile incidents of people, of Joe Bloggs, you know, calling out these role models, if you like, in sport, with no repercussions. There's a big one in Welsh rugby, plays for who does he play for? Plays for the Dragons. And mate, this poor old bloke's getting hounded all the time. On Twitter, and it's just it's horrendous. But surely, would you not agree that surely there should be something in place whereby these guys, you have to actually give like identification, you know, like so these accounts can be tracked to you, because you can't set up these fake accounts. Would that not make sense?
Absolutely. It's well, I mean, it's trying to scrutinise social media. How do we? I mean, it's I can't stand social media. I really can't. We do the postings on Instagram and all that, but
sorry, mate, I'm bad for it at the moment.
Yeah, well, you're good at it. You're not trolling, and I think in this, it's two different senses. But that no one can control that. Everyone's allowed allowed an opinion. I prefer things on black and white and in paper.
Yeah.
But and I think things are a little bit more believable, or think we've had, there's a little bit more thought process that's gone into reading the actual paper.
Being responsible for your actions, you know.
That's right.
Facing the repercussions if you do something like that.
That's right. The letters to the editor weren't so brutal as what we see on social media.
Yeah, exactly.
These trolling incidents. Did I ever tell you, can I come back there a little bit? Did I ever tell you, because you rang a bell there in my mind, about a rugby league series that we used to do when we were kids at Wairarapa College? So my brother, right, he liked Queensland. The other brother, he liked New South Wales.
Ooh, mama.
So there was a divide. So when the match was on, we used to...
opposite sides of the room.
Yeah, so it got... So what we did, Sarah, we said, right, you pick your, let's say, 20 guys. And the other brother said, I'll pick my 20 guys. And we will have a State of Origin match. And it didn't quite work like that. We wanted to divide it down the hallway of our house. So we said, anyone that lives on that side of town, you're Queensland. Anyone that lives on that side of town, you're New South Wales. It didn't really turn out like that, because the State of Origin, for some reason, no one knows the connection, but you're either a blue or a maroon. But I don't even think the Kiwis know this, or the kids in New Zealand know this. And as it turned out, basically, whatever team you went and supported, you could go and play for that team.
Yeah.
And we were a rugby school. We certainly weren't a rugby league school. But it was around the year of about 1995, 93, and that's when the Warriors joined the NRL. So it was being pumped up, and a lot of people were wanting to go and play league. And our school wasn't having a bar of it, and the principal at the time, he wasn't having a bar of rugby league being played on the grounds at the school. But that didn't stop us. So we went and we passed out flyers around, and we promoted the hell out of this game. We even built a shield, and we made these videos and a little newspaper to go with it. And we drew up one hell of a crowd. So we played the first match on the school grounds, and three quarters of the way through the game, we got booted off the ground from wasn't the principal, but it was from a senior teacher.
One of his acolytes.
And we thought it was a disgrace, and obviously we informed our parents, and our parents got in behind it. And one of the parents was good friends with the mayor of the mayor of the town, Bob Francis. Bob Francis was a fabulous rugby referee, and refereed the big matches when Canterbury were taking on Auckland. And he said, no problem, I'll find you a park, but even better than that, I'll ref your rugby league match.
Unreal.
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. But it wasn't just the rugby league match that went ahead that was good. It was the rivalry. I mean, we didn't have messaging or telephones in those days where you could really hype it up. But geez, it was big at the time, and there was some
whole word of mouth.
Yeah, that's right. I can't remember all of the stories because it was too long ago. But I can certainly get hold of my contacts to remind me of some of the funny stuff that we used to do. That's for sure. But huge rugby league in New Zealand in State of Origin, whether you support New South Wales or whether you support Queensland. I don't know what the connection is there, but there is a big divide.
Why is league so big out in New Zealand and Australia?
Well, I'm guessing the rugby league originated in the north of England, didn't it? And it came from the miners, wasn't it? More of the mining games, and it actually went professional before rugby union.
Yeah.
And where rugby league is big in New Zealand is on the west coast, which is the coal mining area in the South Island, and in South Auckland it's big. It's certainly not the biggest sport, but I know there's a close connection between the league players and the rugby players. A lot of them are friends. In fact, there's a good rugby league player who's just signed with New Zealand Rugby. Yeah, and I haven't seen him in union. He did play union when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And I guess his goal will be to try and...
Cash, money.
But also to play for the All Blacks. I think that's where he wants to...
Yeah.
Tuivasa Schlek. Tuivasa Schlek is his name.
Tuivasa Schlek.
Yeah.
That's right. bouncing back, obviously we've been... We've spoken a fair bit about like the ladies' basketball in Luxembourg.
Yeah.
So obviously had a couple of results... in from the weekend there.
Who got pumped this weekend? That's all I'm interested to know. I forget about the 93
to
93.
That's coming, big boy. Chill out, all right? Okay, so Itzella, I believe that's Etelbrook, beat Contern, 86-66. So not a huge win, comfortable.
Right.
Comfortable. Moselle Pikes, okay, they pumped Sparta, 91-23. The no pros is killing them.
Get in there, Moselle Pikes. I'm going to follow them and see how they get on next week. I'm all in for killings and basketball.
Obviously, we'll talk about the men's basketball as well. Moselle Pikes, they lost out to Contern.
I told you the other week, Contern are good. I've seen them in Sandviler driving their cars, and they're good. There's a lot of American fellas that play for them.
That's why they're good. So, interesting stat. The Pikes only made 5 out of their 28 3-point shots. That's what's killed him, mate. You've got to hit the threes. You've got to rain the threes. And you're laughing. Actually, one of the boys commented on when we talked about the ladies' basketball the first time. He's like, Browner, how have you spoken about basketball and not talked about the Will Ferrell movie, Semi-Pro?
Semi-Pro.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Oh. It's
so good. that film is so underrated.
It is. It's up there. That was one of his... earlier
yeah,
films,
that's
wasn't it?
I think
it
that came good. Out when I was.
Well,
yeah.
That's what reminded me the other week when I said the pulled up white socks and the short white.
That's exactly white what he was getting shirts. To.
The New Zealand Sevens tournament was one of the first fancy dress tournaments out there.
Remember,
brother Tony, they dressed. Oh no, it was actually Hong Kong, wasn't it? Hong Kong, they were dressing up. But anyway, in the New Zealand one, my brother's first fancy dress was semi-pro.
Unreal.
12 of them.
Unreal.
It's quality.
Sam Sturley, if you're listening, I know you've got your stag do coming up and we're going to the fourth test of the India test match at the end of August. That's what I think we should all go as. That'd be amazing if we all dressed up as the Flint Tropics. Let's get tropical.
Yeah.
So good.
Talking of which, staying on to cricket, India, New Zealand, World Cup test final.
Yeah, interesting. Probably.
I'd love to get tickets to that.
Lord's?
I went to Lord's last year.
No, but is it? It's the match is played at Lord's,
so.
Isn't it?
I believe so.
Same New Zealand to win that.
There's a good chance. There's a very, very good chance. We're on fire at the moment.
The Indians just pumped us, didn't they?
Wow.
3-1.
Yeah, the batting let you down, didn't it? Big time. Big time. A few players getting called out there.
Yeah. Sorry, just bouncing back to the men's basketball results.
Go for it.
Heffingen, they beat Racing 71-54. Arantia beat Estella, and that's the first loss of the season for the team from Etelbrook. Esch beat Sparta, which actually it's only 79-71.
That's the closest one, but I was just going to say that a lot of these points, there's 10 or 20 difference in all these results here.
Well, not against this one. Amical lost to T71, 79-107.
That's my new team, T71.
Just sounds cool, doesn't it?
Yep.
What, are you just going to pick the team that scores the most points?
Yep. I was going to go for, and in the women's league, I'm going to go for Muzel Pikes.
Okay.
And in the men's, I'm going to support T71.
Okay, well, but the thing is, the next team scored more points.
Do you want to am I changing team? Yeah.
Change allegiance.
Tell me who it was.
Quite Man U, Man City, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
The last game was Telstar and Residence from Walford-Ange, right? They won 116-65. Resident scored 69 points in the first.
So I am changing teams. Residence. Nah, T71 sounds cooler.
It does, rolls off. Sounds like a new model of the Terminator or something.
Exactly.
What is it? T72. What's the one Arnold Schwarzenegger? That's an interesting one.
Table Tennis Club and Sandweiler have got DT71. I think they're saying. Why 71?
Do you reckon they all have tattoos? All the
DT71. Like the arms and stuff. Yeah. Popeye.
Be careful what you say about me, man. You posted a picture on our Instagram in the week.
I did. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So we posted that picture of the two under-13s players from South Africa. One is 198 centimetres, 6'5".
Yeah.
And 102 kegs. The other one, okay, is 145 centimetres, okay, which is 4'7", or 4'8", if we're rounding it up, and 39 kg. David versus Goliath.
How are they going to compete against each other?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the question we asked. I mean, what question would you put with that picture? We had a few boys comment, which was brilliant. Thank you very much. Josh Van Zeeland suggested using different height.
Josh Van Zeeland, he'll get a burrito when he comes back, because I tell you what, he's put some brilliant comments on.
Yeah,
he's pretty active.
He wants to be an influencer, mate.
Oh, does he? Does he really?
Yeah.
Come on, George. Where does he live?
Can't tell you that. GDPR, mate, you know.
Of course.
He lives in Luxembourg, though. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I think I know where he's from. I think I know where he is. He's got those
sort
of comments.
Trolling him. You're going to start trolling him. He'll turn up at your house, mate. He'll turn up at Top Spot.
I'll give you £100
if you post his address, yeah. But Stu Logier, he jumped in for us, and he said they already do this in the lower grades in New Zealand.
They do.
So there's an under 85 kilo weight class.
80-80s it's called.
Yeah. By all accounts, it's much faster, but it obviously doesn't carry the prestige of maybe playing for a Canterbury or playing for an Auckland, because they do have rep teams for it. Okay, but obviously you don't have a Super Rugby under 85 kilo team, you know, because that would be no one, because they're all massive. But you know, is that not?
I think it's healthy.
Yeah, what I was going to say, is that not? It sounds cheesy, but what it's about, you know, this is what rugby is about. You know, they're playing for enjoyment. They're not playing because they want to play for the next level.
I think
play
it's
for
a,
their
if you want to grow the game of rugby, I think it's very, very.
You don't want to play with the big boys or the bigger boys. The bigger boys.
Well, particularly at
drop down
at
that
age. It was. That's not to say these young guys. I mean, I think in the long run. The advantage goes with a lot of these smaller ones. Look at Faf de Klerk, tiny player. Who is that?
Chelson Colby.
Incredible player.
You step you in a phone box, pal.
Nehe Milne-Scudder, another one, tiny. But this other, Colin Slade, was a tiny
Shane
one.
Shane Williams, great.
Dan Carter. He was tiny. Was tiny.
Probably put on a bit of timber now. So another guy who commented was a fella called Saman Rezapur. Okay, he's been helping me out with the sound, so if the sound is crap today, you can blame it on him. Okay, but he, Saman, is a former Luxembourg national team rugby captain, happily retired, and he's living it up out in Canada at the moment. He's moved out there. Saman's always been big into his photography and videography. Man, check out his Instagram; it's really, really cool stuff. He's actually set up a podcast with a couple other a guy and a girl who sort of have an interest in what they do, and it's
does he have a technician, because that's what we need.
Yeah, well, he's one of the guys is very techie, so he does all that. So I think Saman just rocks up with his big bag of pastries in the morning. You know, Have you ever seen the Simpsons episode where Homer is like goes into the locker room and there's the kid who's the genius and he's like, ah, look at that fat kid, he's got boobies or something like this, and then starts chasing him, whipping the towel, and the kid's like running away and he's going, I'm full of chocolate. This is what I used to, I didn't do that to Saman, just to clarify. I wouldn't jump around the changing room tracing a prop trying to whip him with a towel again, but that's the reference there. But yeah, you can check out their podcast as well. It's called Coast Break Collective. Always good to hear a familiar voice. It's great to see. I'm really happy to see he's actually loving it out there.
Smashing lad, Saman. Smashing lad.
Top bloke.
I used to coach him squash when he was a youngster.
There's no way he played squash.
He did. He was good. He was a good little player.
His coordination is awful.
He can't throw a ball in straight.
Mate, he couldn't catch a cold. We obviously went up a division a couple of years ago, and our first game was against Ukraine. So we had a decent team out, and it was quite close in the first half, and we had two opportunities. If we'd have scored, we'd have been probably 10, 12 points ahead of them at half time. But the second one is the one that you just can't help but laugh about, because it's like, how have you not caught that? Basically, we've kicked into the corner, we've boxed them in, they've kicked out, missed touch, we've moved the ball wide. Yours truly, Scott Brown, has got the ball, no scrum half. So I've chipped over the top, regathered, popped it on the inside to Gareth Jeffries, who was playing nine, he was on the inside, and then he's popped it on the inside to Saman. Now, I have to do sound effects for this bit, but honestly, Saman's, obviously the ball's coming.
Come on,
Saman. And
it's
almost like, and it's just coughed up, mate. It can only be about 2 or 3 metres out for the line, and you're just like, how have you dropped that?
Where was that game played?
That was played in a place called Lviv in Ukraine. Beautiful city. I think we lost that. What was the score in the end? I think it was something like 25-16 or something. A very winnable game.
So the try would have won the game?
Well, you can't say that. They probably would have kicked them. They probably never got out of second gear, so we always just wound them up, and then we'd have lost by 60 points or something like that, you know? That's always a funny one. But yeah, fair play to him, you know, up in sticks and moving out to the far side of the world, you know, seems to be going really well, and, you know, wish him all the, well, you make your own luck, don't you? So I won't say good luck, but wish him all the best. But bouncing back to the whole, the reason why I mentioned Saman was he suggested tackling below the waist. Okay, but how the hell is someone who's 6'5" going to tackle below the waist on someone who's 4'7"?
Difficult tackle.
Yeah.
I like the 80-80s, I must admit. Yeah. I think it's a fair game.
At junior level or just at senior level?
Should be able to have it at senior level as well.
The question...
You're trying to get numbers into the game. That's and whatever game it is.
Bums on seats.
Bums on seats. Get numbers into the game. And, don't get me wrong. It's always... It's pleasurable to tackle the big dudes, that's for sure. But...
We'll stay out of the way of them in my case.
Yeah.
The question I actually thought I would comment on is who out of those two is more likely to stay in the game for longer? As in, for their, you know, for
I
the
think
rest
it's
of
completely
life.
Unknown, because there's such a massive path, a massive challenges that they've still got to face in life. The bigger guy, I mean, could be more prone to injury.
But also, he's probably going to. He's going to experience that success based on his size at an early age, whereas the young lad, you know, might be more accustomed to, you know, dealing with adversity, dealing with failure, you know, which we've talked
That's
about
right.
before. So maybe you're better conditioned, you know, to deal with the bumps in the road that ultimately, and you do see it, you get guys who are, you know,
late.
greatest thing on earth, you know, all the way up through the age grade, and then for some reason they get somebody who's maybe a bit, not quite as big, but a bit tougher or a bit more savvy or whatever it might be, and then they think, actually, this isn't for me, because they're not, you know, I'm a believer that you have to learn, you know, losing, you have to learn how to deal with it. How are you going to react when you lose? Are you going to, you know, you're going to spit the dummy out? You're going to complain about this, complain about that? Or are you just going to get back on the horse and keep going again?
There's a chance for David. And late developers as well. Ali Williams was a lock, and he didn't play rugby till a later age.
Yeah.
or they have played rugby at an earlier age, have switched to another sport, basketball or rowing or something, and then come back to it.
Yeah.
It's even happened in squash. A lot of the top squash players in the world haven't necessarily been the best players haven't necessarily won all the under 13.
Some people who get at it, and you know yourself, you'll play against boys and you can get into their heads, you know, very easily. What do we call it? We call it gamesmanship. It's not against the rules, you know, but if I can,
and it's enjoyable doing it. It's enjoyable doing it. Yeah. Did I tell you what's going on with the squash?
What we're
doing at the moment?
No, go on, hit me.
So there's a few of us older boys, and who've got a reasonable standard, and there's a bunch of young lads who are very good and arguably better and proving it they're better. So with this COVID at the moment, we're only allowed two people on court. There's no competitions can take place, but because of that, it's depressing some of the young fellas. So I gave them a call 3 weeks ago, and I said, why don't we organise a game where we play the youth versus the masters?
Yeah.
And we do it for 5 weeks. So each week, one master player will play someone from the youth.
Yeah.
And we'll do a little bit of a team score. They absolutely loving it. But what it is doing is also binding the camaraderie between those masters and the youth that is not there. When we play for our clubs against each other, we don't really have the same level of communication. It's too competitive, let's say. But it's been very, very good. So we have a WhatsApp page, WhatsApp chat, and
I'm sure the banter is flying. The squash banter.
Well,
is
who? Well, clearly, whose banter is winning hands down? It's the old boys. But
the only one in this group is that
exactly. Chat to myself. I'm putting different numbers, but it's brilliant. And these young guys are learning, I would say, better or faster. Their communication, we've played 2 weeks now out of the five. You can see their communication, their confidence when they come into the club. They're communicating better. I like it.
How does it work with, obviously, because COVID's the killer at the moment? How does that work? How do you know?
So you and I right now with the regulations that are in place.
Yeah.
Only two people can play squash at one time.
It's easy then, isn't it?
Is it, well, you would say so, but actually with training and with, let's say, better players...
For games, you can just crack on, can you? You don't have to wear a mask when you're on court, do you?
No, you have to wear a mask in and around the venues.
Okay.
But on courts, the two players do not have to wear a mask. But there's no spectators. So in this instance, ourselves are going to play a game of squash and we can just...
Oh, okay.
Rock up in our masks, take our masks off and play our game of squash. And that's how I'm organising it at the moment. No handshakes.
Yeah.
No supporters.
Handshake's a funny one. Handshake says a lot about a man, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like tapping, saying cheers and looking in the eye and
you don't want a soft flimsy grip, do you?
No, you don't want a soft flimsy grip, but there's some things you don't want. Danny Boland, I don't even met this guy. He used to play rugby for RCO. He's a big, strong guy. He's into theatre now. Jesus, from the age of seven, he used to have the strongest handshake. I had to give him a warning every time I shook his hand. I said, steady, Danny.
Yeah.
Far, and he's got the hand the size of a football mitt.
Yeah, yeah. My one of the boys back home, he was big into that, you know, shake your hand, get up out the chair, look you in the eye sort of thing. And if ever he came over, if he was meeting another friend of mine or something, I'd be like, Give him a handshake here and see what he does. And he would just know it was me sent up straight away. But.
Did you ever meet Ken Lindsay here? Ken Lindsay, another a Kiwi lad. He had a very strong handshake. Far out, your old knuckles used to crunch. When you shake hands, we have shaken hands. You get firm grip. But do you go on the underside or the over? Because some people put their hand straight out.
Yeah.
Really, like, arrogant. You want to tap the top of it and just start flopping it. You go, what are you doing?
Like someone's trying to hand you off, you sort of tap it away.
Yeah. I don't go 100% straight in. I don't do a straight bind, let's say. I go with a little bit open, just saying I'm open, I'm a bit warmer to that. I find the people that go straight over the top,
I mean, there's no, more arrogant.
I don't like shaking. For me, people that go straight over the top, you're as bad as a floppy shaker.
Yeah. But I mean, like, what do you do if you get it wrong halfway through? Do you sit to the bloke and go, my bad?
Can we do that again?
Okay. Can we do that again? Or do you just think, right, I've got to turn it on for 20 minutes here so he forgets about that handshake? You know, that's the... How do you move on from that?
Yeah. The other one is the bind as well. Because sometimes you don't get a good binding with the other mitt.
Yeah.
And you know, you've only got like half, the other guy's got your hand, you've only got half your knuckles.
Do you just think, if you've got the strong bind, you just think, well, I've got you now, big boy, and just crack his knuckles, being like, that's your fault for not getting your hand in close enough.
Not binding correctly.
Yeah, exactly. Penalty.
What happens in rugby when you, in the former times when we were shaking hands, because you've got 15 people queuing up, so you're going to be shaking hands with, let's say, 25 people ultimately. Yeah. You cannot get 25 binds in a row correct.
But you don't always... it depends. Some guys you'll know, I think there's different levels to it. So if you don't really know them or you haven't really seen them in the game, it might just be a handshake. If you've had a good ding dong with someone, it might be the old, you know, the whole grab of thumbs,
give a bit of
shoulder
bump,
tap
well
on the
played,
bank,
right?
You know what I mean? That sort of thing. So I think it varies. You know, you could be doing, you get through some handshakes on a rugby pitch, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then. But yeah, we've gone off on a bit of a tangent there, as we always do.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Another one we haven't really talked about is soccer.
Soccer.
Soccer. You know, obviously we talk about all sports. One of the lads sent me...
I wonder why that is, Scott. Why do we not talk about soccer?
It wouldn't be...
They get enough press. I mean... Yeah. We're a sports chat, so we need to give them time.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you like it? Do you like football? I call it football because it's...
It's funny. I would have obviously watched it as a youngster growing up, and I know a guy who I used to play with, and he was a diehard Arsenal supporter. And obviously you're a West Ham man, so I won't tell you that. If you post on social media, I'm sure you can get his address for a small price, you know. He loved his rugby, you know, Six Nations and all that. But he said there is nothing like going to watch the Champions League midweek. Everyone's coming out from work, piling into what was Highbury, but it's now obviously the Emirates. Said piling in there, you know, the Champions League music, you'd recognise it straight away.
Yes.
Yeah. So they have all that playing. He said the buzz, and he's been to watch, you know, the Heineken Cup and the European Cup in rugby and stuff like that. He said, but the Champions League, apparently the atmosphere is meant to be something else.
I went to an FA Cup match, West Ham v Liverpool. Must have been 10 years ago, maybe longer, 2009 maybe. Absolutely phenomenal experience. I mean, arguably one of the best sporting experiences I've had. I haven't been to a Rugby World Cup, but it was up there with my experience when I got that ticket from your old man to go to All Blacks VI.
Oh, yeah. Was that... who won that game?
Shut up. How did they get on in the World Cup?
Who won?
But it was a good experience. Going to that game, and that's because of where I was gratefully seated from your father, actually.
But don't you Dublin's unreal, like the atmosphere, the whole being, where the stadium is around the ground.
The stadiums are crucial to good experiences, aren't they? And that is why that FA Cup game was at Cardiff Arms Park, Millennium Stadium. I'm showing my age, aren't I?
Yeah.
At Millennium Stadium was. Unlike it to have half the stadium in Liverpool red and claret and blue on the other half of the stadium. It was just electric, and the atmosphere was amazing as well. Up there with that Ireland All Black experience, I was lucky enough to sit next to Sean Fitzpatrick, actually, for that game.
Ah, was that would have been, because we talked about, you know, famous people.
Last week we did,
yeah.
Yeah, Phil the Power Taylor was certainly the most most famous person that I met. But when you meet these people, even when I met Sean Fitzpatrick, you don't really know what to say to him. I mean,
was he sound like normal?
He was he was grumpy after the game. He left with about a minute to go, but I think that's because he had obligations.
TV stuff to do, yeah.
And he wasn't that comfortable throughout the game. I think he thought that the All Blacks might do better. I mean, yeah, he was a... I mean, you're not really chatting to him. I don't know the bloke, but you don't really know what to say a lot of the time. With Phil the Power Taylor was a lot more
about like darts and like flights and like the point
how you hold it,
yeah. Do you like spin it? Do you spin it clockwise, counterclockwise, and stuff like that? Do you ever do the one where you like grab the tip of it and like throw it?
No,
just to see if the weight. No,
I don't do that.
Darts,
but so back onto that football. We don't really talk too much about it, do we? But it gets enough headlines everywhere, doesn't it? It's in our face, football. So that's why I like to talk about other sports.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, ladies' football never gets the props. It, never gets enough coverage.
Why is that?
Quickly touch on that. Why is that? That's a good question. Not as many people playing it, probably. Not as much funding in it.
Yeah.
Not as much media exposure.
World Cup, the stadiums were full, weren't they?
Where was the World Cup?
Was it not Sweden? US?
If it was in the US, don't surprise me at all. The US are mad for their women's football out there.
Yeah.
Or ladies' football. Whichever one you want me
to
call it. But yeah, one of the lads sent me through the results from last week for the ladies' football. And there were some big scores in here, bud. Reminds me when I was playing... back in the day for Budbury at St Michael's when I was, I think it would have been under 13s, mate, we were so toilet. We got pumped, actually, we got pumped every single week, 15, 20-0, 22-0, whatever it was, we got pumped. And then
where did you play? Were you a striker or a goalie?
I was a striker. But when you're playing in a team like that, you are basically
not
stood
getting
on the halfway line. Every now and again, the goal kick might reach halfway. You might get to go towards it. And I think the only goal I scored was the big dogs in Northamptonshire at that time were a team called Gregory Celtic. And I was obviously stood up front and the ball got... big kick out. The goalkeepers can't kick it normally, so you normally have one of the centre backs hoof it up the park.
They can kick it
a bit further. And their centre back's gone forward and it's bounced over his head and it's just bounced for me and I've kicked it forward and the goalie's come flying out. I've hoofed it from about 25 yards out in goal. One goal for the season for a striker. Embarrassing. But we got pumped every week, but every training session we were there. You know, it's the first sort of taste of team sport for myself and a lot of the other guys. And then we played this team called Brixworth, and we lost to them 1-0. And the chairman of our football club came in and basically gave us this chat about how it was a moral victory. Like we had, on paper, we hadn't won, but we had won that game because they were going to win the league and stuff, and we
absolutely
lost 1-0. And that's one of those.
And the boys felt well.
I don't know. You're a bit young. Like when at the time, maybe you don't appreciate something like that, but now you can look back and reflect. You know, because that's sort of like 15, 20 years. Well, not 20 years ago. I'm not that. Maybe it is 20 years ago. Wow, I'm old. And then it got to the last game of the season, and we drew 2-2 with a team.
Fair play.
The season afterwards, we got some new players in, but the bulk of the squad stayed. And that was
fair
it for the
play
next 2-3 years. But I think that's obviously like, you know, a lot of people, I think if that starts to happen, will just knock it on the head and stop. But that would have been down to my old man. I think, you know, you signed up for it. You're in.
Yeah, I had the same. I had a season playing for Villa. What was the name?
Aston Villa in the Premier League.
No, I wasn't Aston
Villa. Did you have trials? Dodgy knee?
Yeah, I was rubbish. I didn't know what side of the football to kick. I was that rubbish. Fortunately, Dad didn't sign me up the year after and I went back to rugby again.
Yeah, fair play. I mean, I didn't really start playing rugby till I was probably about 15.
Oh, really?
That's when I started. You know, the rugby club that I first played for was literally 200 metres from the football club. It's like the community. So there's a secondary school I was at, was in Budbrook, and you had the at the other end of the village, It's quite a big village, actually. You had a football club, car park here, and you drive around a little bit further, you've got the rugby club, but you could literally see, you know, there was a cricket pitch in the middle.
Would you support that senior team now? Would you go down, would you say, that's my team, that's the team I follow? Yeah. Or would you look in the newspaper and see?
I'm lucky enough to know a few lads I went to school with still play down there. Good boys, but my home junior club would be Toasterians, you call it, or Toasterarians. It's in Toaster, which is near where my parents live. And that's where I played my youth and then senior rugby, and then was lucky enough to get back there for a couple of years to play with a lot of boys who grew up with some absolute legends down there, and some of them will listen to this actually. There's a few stories.
Speaking of legends,
a few stories I want me to tell, but I'll be careful.
that Ireland All Black game, I sat with a couple of legends with Andy.
Careful what name.
No. These boys. I met them in the pub before the game.
Yeah. Who was
What's the name of the guy? He's got that accent.
It's, I know you're talking about. It's
Mike Speakman. Yeah. Mike, that's
ear, him. Ear, 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 ear.
I played a lot with Scott.
Yeah. So I played with his two boys. One of them actually played for England under 18s, George, and then the old one, Ronnie. I'd be quite good friends with. He's put on a bit of timber, so let's just say he's heavy for a back now, you know.
Yeah. And the other lad that I was there with, he played for Scotland.
Matty Stewart.
Yep.
Legend.
Absolute legend. A hell of a nice guy.
Yeah.
Rob McCordick, who I play a bit of golf with here, he played with at Blackheath with him.
Yeah, that's it. So Matty was coaching at Blackheath as well, yeah.
Okay. So, cracking lads. And I think you get that a lot in rugby, where guys just walk into a pub and they go, and they just start into their conversation where they left off.
Exactly.
And you realise how small the rugby community is.
Oh, you know somebody who knows somebody sort of thing, don't you?
Yeah. I'm coming from a minor sporter and you're quite amazed that a sport as big as rugby is, you're always very well connected.
Yeah, Matt coached me when I was at Canterbury. Yeah, great bloke. They had a different side to him, you know, when you did something.
Oh, you wouldn't want
to. Mate, you did. Yeah. You'd be thankful you were on the pitch and he wasn't allowed to come on the pitch to get you sort of thing.
Because he played against the All Blacks.
Yeah, he won about 50 caps, 50 caps for Scotland.
So we're the third pint in over lunch, and then a question on him, and he just said, when I played against them, it was a bit like that. What?
Yeah, but he wouldn't come in and tell you that straight.
No,
it was 50 caps.
No, yeah, not
yeah,
at all.
Yeah,
I was asking for a comment because he certainly knew his rugby a lot greater than I did, and I said, what would you do in this situation? How would they do this? He said, actually, when I played against them, I was, what? Yeah, very humble guy, lovely, lovely man.
Yeah, a lot of time for him. He actually did, so you know, I don't know if you remember when we first started the Little Lions, the first T-shirts we wore for coaching, they were like black with like the gold on it.
Yep.
So he did all the embroidery and printing
okay
on those for me. So he runs that company in Northamptonshire. They they do loads of work where I'll give him a shout out here or tag it in the thing.
Smashing lad.
But yeah, top bloke, mate, top bloke. I'll give a shout out to all the boys at Toasterians as well, some legends down there. There's some, if it's a shame it's not 8 o'clock and I could tell a few more stories about what actually happens there on a rugby club.
Douglas Villa was the name of that team that I once had a season for.
Douglas Villa.
Douglas Villa was the name.
Is that what you do if you want to set up a football team? You just rip the name off something else. we'll just be Sandvila United.
Villa.
Or West.
They do that here in Luxembourg, don't they? They rip the names out of the Portuguese. So one of them's called
Ham Benfica or something.
Yeah, Ham Benfica.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah. No, exactly. Anyway, so we would say, this is the funny one when we talk about the football. So I don't know if you saw Rangers, they won the SPL there for the first time in 10 years.
Because they went bankrupt,
didn't
they?
Yeah, they went into liquidation. So obviously two biggest clubs in Scotland were...
Celtic and Rangers.
There you go, everyone knows that, okay? But obviously Rangers, they got dumped down to the bottom of the league. Now, they only got dumped down to the third division. So I'm not sure about the ins and outs of this, but I imagine that is the bottom of the professional game in Scotland. So that's why they've been put there. In rugby, it's different. Again, a big club called Richmond who play in the championships, the level below the premiership. They played the first year in what was the premiership in like 98 or something like that. And they had boys like Augustin Pichard, the Quinnell brothers playing for them.
They went bankrupt and they went all the way down to, you know, old Pisporian's third team or whatever it is, at the bottom, and then have gradually worked their way up. And, you know, they're one of the biggest clubs in the UK now. The same happened with London Welsh. But have you ever seen, I've shown you those them videos of Kevin Bridges, the comedian, when he,
yes, does,
he talks about the vaping.
There's a vaping, yeah.
Yeah, he does this sketch where he talks about Rangers going into liquidation and stuff, and they had to publish the obviously financial reports of, you know, where the money was going and all this sort of thing.
Right.
And he's found this bit that they owed 40 quid to like a face painting company. So he was basically does this sketch about how it must have been an absolute shambles in the in the boardroom at the time. You know, when they're sort of running through the books and trying to find out where all the money is. So he says he's got some fella that's just like, well, the ship's sinking, so let's have a bit of a laugh here. So he's got some fella who's been like, you know, he's got all the lion costume and is like running around going, and, running into all the offices. And then one of the lads is like, go and do it to the boss. And he's like, I will. just having the crack and stuff, mate. Yeah, I love that bloke. If anybody here, here's a ticket's going to watch him, I'm all over it. You can't get enough of him and his accent, mate. He's,
oh, when life gets back to normal, it'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Stevie Gerrard's done a fabulous job there, though, hasn't he? From what I've been reading, I love listening to him in these never say die attitudes in sporting. He's not the only coach,
well,
let's say.
Well, edge, don't they? Just from a youngster, he, you know, obviously. It goes a lot deeper when you talk about how he rocked up in the academy at Liverpool and they'd have to clean the boots for the seniors and stuff like that. You know, it's that whole, it sort of grounds you, puts you in your place.
Hierarchy. Exactly. For me, there hierarchy exists in
sport.
Whereas now,
if I rocked up down the club and told one of the
under-18s to do your boots.
Geez, there'd be hissy fits. I'll probably get a strongly worded email from my mum, you know, or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
In French, no doubt, because obviously playing in Metz. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yes.
But I think also he's obviously got some. They've got decent backers in now. The interesting one though is it's a sort of widely accepted that, you know, those two had traditionally been like the dominant forces in Scottish football, and there was all this talk: could they come down in the and play in the Premier League? I don't know. Would they be mid-table in the Premier League? I can't imagine they're going to be near the top, you know.
They'll be beneath West Ham, that's for sure.
That's all that matters, isn't
that's
it?
That's all that matters.
Yeah, touche.
That's right. We're actually doing all right this season, you know. I say we, West Ham.
Do you mean us, as in the podcast? Are you talking about West Ham as well?
Well, both. We're both going pretty well.
Yeah.
No, West Ham. We're doing okay. We're actually having it.
Play at the Olympic Stadium.
Zero spectators for everyone.
Yeah.
We're doing.
This isn't a football podcast. Okay,
yes.
It's a sport podcast. We don't want to talk about football.
Yeah, exactly.
The only one I sort of forgot to touch on was the boxing one. Is obviously that is already governed by weight, isn't it? You know.
It is indeed.
You've got the weight
indeed,
classes.
Yep.
Like judo. Those combat sports tend to be.
Which you can put some of these physically natured sports such as rugby and NFL.
Yeah, you could put them in the same bracket.
In the same bracket.
But another interesting one is like the weight cutting that these guys do, like the hell that they put themselves through just to get down to weight, and then boom, stick on 3 or 4 kilos in 24 hours before a fight. You know, it's absolutely mental how it goes,
Israel Adesanya.
Yeah, he lost at the weekend.
His first loss. He took it well. He took it very, very well. He was fighting upper class. He put on weight.
Yeah.
He wanted. He's got the light middleweight belt.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Or
okay.
No, Mate's got the lightweight belt. And he wanted to go for the light middleweight belt.
Yeah.
And he came across this Polish guy, and both spoke very. Speaking to Joe Rogan on afterwards, who's the commentator, and they both came across really well. Good voices for the UFC, actually. He just said that he wasn't quite good enough, but he wants to give it another crack. I never used to like the UFC. 5 years ago. I thought it was just violence, but it's beyond that now. When two teams have respect for each other, that's when I enjoy it more.
That's become more prominent now, hasn't it? You know, the trash talking, I believe, is part of it.
I can't stand trash talking to take. They still do it in boxing.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they're very good at it. Tyson Fury is very, very good at it. But I don't like the trash talking because... Yeah. And if you want to be... If you're a world-class athlete, you have respect for your opponents.
Yeah.
They can... compete with you. They're there for a reason. If they're on the same court as you or the same pitch as you, the same field as you, they're there for a reason. And I try and teach that to all the youngsters. Have respect for your opponents.
Yeah. I just want to finish on one thing here. I think it's important to say that obviously we love our sport. We'll talk about sport all day. And it's safe to say that ultimately growing up, you know, you wanted to be the next world superstar, and for whatever reason it doesn't happen. I was given a bit of advice by a guy who used to coach me when I was at uni in Ireland, and it's, you know, if just because you don't make it to the level that you want to make it to, whatever level that is, that doesn't mean you weren't successful at your sport.
That's right.
And so I think that's something to always remember in sport. You know, as we talked about before, sport reaches every corner of the room and has the ability to, you know, to bring people together and stuff. And we talk about respect and something, we can always have that, you know, mutual respect, whether it's playing table tennis for a laugh or whether it's playing serious stuff for the national team, whatever it is. Just because you're not at the top level doesn't mean you're not successful at what you do.
No, it's also in life they say write your goals down, because we cross so many hurdles successfully and we're already looking to that next hurdle. You know, whether you become the house champion, the street champion, the village champion, and we go across them. So write them down and acknowledge those successes along the way, and that'll help keep you humble, because not everybody can be a world champion.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone can be in the top 100 in the world in their sport. Write those goals down. Cross them off as you, because you are succeeding.
Exactly. And even when it does get, you know, you're doing your sports or whatever you're doing, you know, even if it's not sport, we're going a bit deep here, but if, you know, whatever you're doing, if you think you're not getting anywhere, just take a few steps back and look at it, you know. Change your perspective, look at the time frame from where you were and where you are now, and I'm sure you'll be in a better place than you were.
I couldn't agree more on that, Scott.
Right, mate. Take it easy, boss.
Enjoy your week,
next week, everybody. Hopefully the sound works, eh?
Yeah, all right.
Chirp.